Welcome to the nara.org.au podcast. I'm your host, Baron Hansen, and we are recording live at Triple U Studios in Nara CBD. What is the nara.org.au podcast? It is a series and collection of stories of the people and characters who make up the fabric of this town of Nara. Today we have a very special guest. We have Commanding Officer of HMAS Albatross, Captain Paul Hannigan. Captain Hannigan's journey began in 1989 when he entered Britannia Royal Naval College in Dartmouth, following his graduation from Napier Polytechnic in Edinburgh, and where he earned an engineering degree. He earned his Royal Navy pilot wings in 1991. For 17 years, he served as a helicopter pilot in the Royal Navy, seeing operational service in Northern Ireland, the former Yugoslavia, and Iraq. However, in 2006, Captain Hannigan made a bold move, immigrating to Australia with his wife and three daughters to join the Royal Australian Navy. Since then, he has held several key positions as a naval aviator, but one of his most notable achievements came during the catastrophic 2019-2020 bushfires that devastated much of the south coast. As commanding officer of 808 Squadron, Captain Hannigan led operations with the MRH-90 Taipan helicopter, providing vital support to the community in a time of crisis. Now, his promotion to captain and appointment to HMAS Albatross mark a crowning achievement in a career that spans over 40 years. Known for his inclusive and decisive leadership style, Captain Hannigan has earned the admiration of his peers and inspires all those who serve under his command. Welcome, Captain Paul Hannigan.
Thank you, Baron. It's great to be here.
How does it feel having that bio read to you? It's quite a list of achievements there.
Yeah, I always find that a little embarrassing, I must admit. And of course, it really says nothing about who I am. It really just talks to what I've done and the badges of military rank that I wear and have worn. So when I'm faced with having had the bio read out in front of an audience, I do like to follow up with a little more about who I am.
Yeah.
And I think that really rounds and completes the picture for many. And I find that we're often caught in that trap, particularly interviews or when we sit down and somebody asks you to say something about yourself. It tends to be what our career achievements have been and what are the things we've done. It doesn't necessarily talk to who we are.
Yeah, I think I first got a sense of who you are the first time I saw you speak at the Shoalhaven Business Chamber Super Dinner, and the way that you delivered it, not just the message, but the way that you spoke was really impressive to me. And that's an example of that, of like, it's not necessarily what we're saying, but also how we're doing it as well. So
yeah.
That's come across in our short interactions that we've had. Plus, the other thing that I've really enjoyed is I've seen you show up a lot for community. I see you out and about in the community, and I think that's a really important aspect of what you're doing as well. So.
Well, that's great. Very kind words. Thank you, Baron. And of course, and supported by my personal values of connection and trust. So showing up in the community really is all about me demonstrating that value of connection to me really is important and is my guiding light.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, today on this podcast, I'm going to ask you some questions about Nara, some easy ones, some softballs to get started, and then we will get into some personal stuff. But what is the most underrated thing about Nara that people always get wrong?
Geez, now you say this is a softball, right? And an easy one to get started. Look, it will be of no surprise, I think, to you and perhaps to the listeners that for me, it's the fact that we probably could be doing so much more in terms of acknowledging Royal Australian Navy in the region and in particular the Fleet Air. Now, I know that will probably wind a few people up because they think we're doing enough. But let me just provide some context to that. HMS Albatross is the only naval air station in Australia. The Fleet Air Arm is the only Fleet Air Arm that we have, and it's based at HMS Albatross. And we as naval aviators, and I consider myself to be a naval aviator because I wear the pilot wings, although I'm not part of the fleet Airarm at the moment, they are tenants and I'm the landlord, if you like. We consider Nowra to be the home of the fleet Airarm. And I think perhaps selling that more would benefit not just the local community, but those who visit as well. Now, I know that there is an ongoing discussion around replacing the chopper on the stick at the moment. I get that. But I would like to see things like Nowra, home of the Fleet Airarm, on signposts. I know that we're working towards, and have done in the past, freedom of entries, and we are doing that. But I think that general narrative can be brought into more everyday discussion. Where we big up and we broadcast loudly that Nowra does have something that is unique. It is its own very, very own naval air station, and we are the home of the Fleet Airarm. So I think that perhaps is a little underrated in many respects. And it's not that necessarily people get it wrong, but I have been walking through the streets of Nowra in my uniform, and people have come up to me and asked me, what is the uniform am I wearing? And when we do Anzac Day parades, people come to me and go, oh, I didn't realise that we had, you know, Navy in the town, or we had so many Navy in the town. So if we're still getting questions and statements like that, then there's something missing, I think. Yeah. So I guess that's where I sit in terms of providing some context to that comment.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point, because I think when I grew up here, the chopper was on the stick, and then we had there was a plane at, on Albatross Road as well. And so always growing up, that was very front of mind. And I remember as kids, we'd go to open days, like air shows and things like that. But I can see how this generation, you know, Albatross is kind of hidden away out there. You know, if you don't go west of Nowra, if you just head down the highway, you don't really know that it's tucked away out there. And so between those two things, no more choppers on the stick, and then, you know, not driving out that way. So I can see how, yeah.
We're never going to be able to change the location of Albatross, right? Yeah. But the chopper on the stick is temporal.
Yeah.
Right now, as we're having this conversation, it has been removed, but it is going back, and there is a community pull. So, yes, we will have the chopper on a stick. And, of course, it's, as you quite rightly mentioned, the sea venom that was on a stick previously was all about tying the community to Albatross and to the Fleet Airarm. So that is something we do.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, there is more probably that we can do that we're not doing. If we are still getting questions such as, what uniform is that you are wearing? And, oh, I didn't realise that we had Navy in the town, or that there were quite so many, which really is based around the fact that you're quite correct in saying Albatross is at the very end of Albatross Road, which is a way out of town.
Yeah, well, not exactly a softball, but thanks for bringing that up, and I think that'll I think that'll help people make a few. Yeah, decisions and choices. And as we do nowra.org.au project, I think that's an important reminder for us as well. How do we continue to integrate more of the Navy, because it is such an important part of the community.
And great opportunity, Byron. You know, if you start talking about Nowra, home of the Fleet Airarm, in your narrative, then, you know, you'll get a jump on everybody else.
Yeah. Early adopter.
Yeah,
so what's your earliest memory of this town, or how did you end up in Nowra?
So you've already talked about me coming back to the Royal Australian Navy in 2006, but what the bio doesn't cover is that whilst I was still flying with the Royal Navy, I got an opportunity to conduct an exchange posting, which meant that I could come with Sarah and our three daughters, Jasmine, Chloe and Sophie, at an early age in 2002, to come and to live in the Shoalhaven, and to spend 2.5 years flying helicopters with the Royal Australian Navy. So I flew Sea Kings with 817 Squadron between 2002 and 2004 as a Royal Navy exchange officer, and we lived in North Nowra. And we had a fabulous opportunity to come without any real commitment to live in the Shoalhaven, to enjoy what the Shoalhaven and Nara had to offer, and then return to the UK and return to my job in the Royal Navy. But of course, during that process, we fell in love with the Shoalhaven. I did have to return in order to complete sufficient time for a pension before I could make an application to be laterally recruited and then to transfer, ostensibly just changing uniforms, still to fly helicopters. And then we came back as a family in 2006. So that, broadly speaking, is how we ended up in Nara. And of course, as I've said in my previous comment, as a helicopter pilot, HMS Albatross is the only naval air station in Australia. So it does draw naval aviators for that reason.
Mm, beautiful. So you've kind of, it was a pretty fruitful exchange then for the Shoalhaven. You came here, you kind of fell in love with the area and thought this is a place we could live and raise our family. And yeah, you came back.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And it's such a long time ago now when we think about it, right?
You know, 24 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And then over those 24 years, what have you noticed has kind of changed about Nara or the Shoalhaven in general?
Oh, hey, when we were first here in 2002, you could pick any beach and we probably would be the only ones on the beach. And now, of course, when we go back to some of our favourite places, we're not alone. So there's quite clearly, and we are talking a long period of time now, there are more tourists coming to the area, which does mean, of course, that we have more traffic on the roads. And that does, on occasion, make us feel as though we're kind of trapped. It's just not worth the bother trying to escape from the beautiful village of Cambawara where we live and what's been our family home now for over 20 years. And I think it's good, but it's a double-edged sword, right? It's great for the local economy and for tourism and what's happening here, but for some of the local residents, particularly in those holiday periods and during those times of year, we are sometimes feeling a little trapped.
So I'd love to talk a little bit more broadly about HMS Albatross. And obviously we've talked about how it's the only naval aviation base in Australia. But how does it play into Australia's defence on a more broad scale?
Great question. I think probably the first thing we should talk about is the fact that HMS Albatross was commissioned as a naval air station on the 31st of August 1948. So for a long time, it has had a key role in the community, and the base itself and the Fleet Air Arm have had a strong presence and real connection with the local community. And interestingly, at the risk of digressing, prior to Albatross being commissioned in 1948, Nara itself as a township had its own civil airfield just at the end of Kalmia Street. So if you drive down Albatross Road and where it branches off left, Kalmia Street, there was a civil airfield. Around 1939, as we were approaching war in Europe and the instability was making everybody a little nervous, we're all experiencing right now, of course, there was an idea then to create a combined general air traffic and a military airfield. And the site was selected at Nara, HMS Albatross, where it sits now. And my understanding is, of course, that it was the best duck hunting in the area. And it was quite a large swamp. And there is an old gentleman who's a member currently for Bomadray and Rotary who remembers as a young boy sitting on his father's tractor with another tractor connected by chains and just driving down through that paddock, clearing all the brush and scrub to clear the space. So they started to build the airfield in 1940, and it became operational in 1942, and it flew Beaufort bombers from there after the Americans and the Dutch had also been operating torpedo bombing aircraft in support of the war, because Pearl Harbor by then had taken place and the Battle of Taranto, where the Royal Navy sank the Italian fleet at harbor in Taranto. and then Pearl Harbor. So torpedo bombing became a thing. Albatross started as RAAF, NARA, operating torpedo bombers and doing a bunch of training. And then towards the end of the war, 1944 to 1946, the Royal Navy Fleet Air Arm decanted from the aircraft carriers in the Pacific and operated from RAF base NARA for 2 years, and they commissioned it as Her Majesty's ship Nabbington for a couple of years. So that ended in 1946, and then there was really a stay of operations for a couple of years until the government decided that the Royal Australian Navy would have its own air arm, and the fleet air arm as a concept was introduced with HMS Albatross, commissioning shortly thereafter on the 31st of August 1948. And it's been a naval air station ever since, and as I've said, it's had a significant role to play in the community. So aviation operations, seaborne, that's aircraft from aircraft carriers initially, and of course we had HMS Sydney and HMS Melbourne as aircraft carriers. We took part in the Korean War, and then later in Vietnam, although our contribution in Vietnam was much smaller and was helicopter borne from a fleet air arm perspective. So a significant piece of history there. What we do now, of course, really centres around the MH-60 Romeo Seahawk, which is arguably the world's most advanced anti-submarine warfare helicopter. And the fleet air arm use Albatross, and what we provide in terms of the airspace, the training areas and the base services and support to enable that capability. So pilots, aviation warfare officers and air crewmen, senso operators, are trained at Albatross. Initially with 723 Squadron on the EC-135 helicopter, and then they moved to 725 Squadron, where they convert to an operational type, being the MH-60 Romeo, prior to joining one of the frontline squadrons, either 808 Squadron or 816 Squadron, to then embark as small ships' flights on the back of our frigates, our destroyers, and in some cases our LHDs, to undertake that anti-submarine warfare role primarily, but they also have a role to play in anti-surface warfare too. So why does that matter? Well, in case you haven't noticed, Australia is an island nation. We are surrounded by water on all fronts. So our sea lines of communication are really important in terms of maintaining our way of life. Much of our trade comes into Australia by sea. Much of it goes out by sea. There are over 400,000 kilometres of undersea cable, which bring in our data for our internet, for our social media, our financial data. And these sea lines of communication are threatened by submarines. And submarines are becoming more and more prevalent and the weapon of choice. And therefore, having a means by which to combat or to deter that threat is essential. Yeah. If we are to maintain the security of our sea lines of communication, our national prosperity, and our way of life. So, you know, Albatross, in terms of being a landlord to the fleet air arm as a tenant, in order to allow it to train and then to fight the MH-60 Romeo at sea in that anti-submarine warfare role, is essential to what you and I enjoy today.
Yeah, thank you for giving that context. And, you know, we obviously, I drive past Albatross every now and then, and was out there recently, but we see the helicopters in training, and that makes a lot more sense and a lot more context of what's actually happening out there under the hood.
Yeah, that's right.
What about how, you know, obviously that's really important to Australia, but, and we've talked about this in the introduction and the first question, but why do you think that Albatross is so pivotal to the Shoalhaven and to Nowra as well.
Yeah, look, it follows on, Baron. We having existed in the Shoalhaven as HMS Albatross since 1948, we employ Australian Defence Force members, Australian public servants, civil contractors in helping us support, maintain, keep the base running. There are over 2,000 people employed at Albatross in and out of uniform. And, you know, I don't have the exact figure, but, you know, broadly we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars to the economy on an annual basis. Our people live in the Shoalhaven. Our people shop in the Shoalhaven. Our people send their kids to school in the Shoalhaven. And they contribute to civic life in so very many aspects. So it's a significant role we play as a major employer in the area. We just happen to do that in uniform. And, of course, by doing it in uniform, we give what we call service. And we're all familiar with service. But service, by definition, for a uniform member, is that selflessness of character to put the interests and the security of the nation and the community ahead of their own. So we're asking quite a lot of our service people.
I think of the population of the Shoalhaven is 108,000, and so if you're saying that's 2,000 people actively employed by Albatross uniform and not uniform, that's about 1 in 50, but that's not including families and kids as well.
No,
you know,
right.
And so the actual impact of that and is the ripple is actually quite large when you consider it, those numbers.
I had a meeting just a few weeks ago with our Defence School Mentor Network. So invariably these are partners, women whose husbands are in defence, and they are employed in schools to look after the defence kids. And we wanted really just to understand how many defence kids were we talking about. We didn't have all of the defence school members in the room, but we had the vast majority. And I think when we got above 600, 600 plus kids broadly are what we're talking about in terms of, you know, in our immediate sort of local area. It's significant. So, you know, when you add it all up, It's a huge footprint.
Yeah, and then, of course, veterans as well. You know, I find that that a lot of people that I meet have maybe retired, they've done their service and they decided to stay here. As have you, you've moved here because you enjoyed the lifestyle and the environment. So there's that veteran imprint as well is quite significant.
And the community engagement piece for us is significant.
Yeah.
Because our activities, whether just the daily routine or in times of emergency response, invariably intersect with the local lives of residents and community members. So, and some might not even know that they're interacting with a defence member. And those close ties that have been established now for some 78 years mean that local community members invariably have a prolonged and very close connection to somebody who's probably in the Navy.
Yeah, definitely. And that was my experience growing up here, certainly at school and high school and playing sport. It was a lot of Defence Force kids and a lot of Defence Force adjacent families that played big roles in those community organisations. What are some of the challenges commanding a base like HMS Albatross?
So HMS Albatross sounds like it's a ship. And of course, in the Navy, it is a ship. It's a shore establishment, but it's still a ship. Now, if I were to be the commanding officer of a ship, then I might have 150 men and women inside my ship. And when I walk up the gangway on a daily basis, then I have them all reasonably close to hand. And I can, what we call, walk the deck plates, which means I can get out of my cabin or my office and I can walk through the ship at various levels and layers, and I can engage with all of the individuals in my ship in their departments, whether they're they are the chefs in the galley, whether they're the stewards in the canteen or in the officer's wardroom, whether they are the technicians that work in the engine room. I can walk the deck plates and I can engage with them relatively easily. And it was the same when I was the commanding officer of 808 Squadron during the bushfires. I had a large hangar with offices and about 150 sailors and air crew who were operating and maintaining the aircraft. And I could leave my office and the hangar and I could engage with everybody relatively easily as I walked the deck plates. Challenge with Albatross, of course, is it's really very big plate for Tross. We have somewhere in the region of 17 resident units, so I'm the landlord for 17 tenants who are all working and operating from Albatross.
Yep.
So in order to maintain that connection and that relationship, because relationships matter, I've got to do a lot of getting about, which means my calendar is extremely busy with opportunities to meet the head of resident units, so the CEOs of squadrons, the commander of the Fleet Air Arm himself, and just ensure that they're getting the service they need, or for me to update them and just continue to build those relationships. Now, not only do I have that inside the fence, but then there's a community engagement footprint as well that you made comment on, which is important to me. So my deck plate, you know, doesn't stop at the gate.
Yeah.
It extends right into town here, which is why you find me here today as well.
Yep.
And that can be a challenge to manage because I only have so much time in my day.
Yep.
And so many days in the week. And of recent, I think probably my wife will tell you, I don't like to say no. So if somebody asks me to do something, particularly from a community engagement perspective, I'll say yes in the first instance. At times I can find myself stretched. Yep. So that's the challenge, I think, for me with such a big ship.
Yeah, you parked your ship right in the middle of the Shoalhaven.
I did. Yeah. It is an aircraft carrier. Right? And it was a question I had on community radio during the bushfires when there were some challenges around ships that we had available and they were moving up and down the coast, and I was challenged about why we didn't have an aircraft carrier parked off Jarvis Bay supporting the immediate sort of locality. And I said, well, you do actually. It's called HMS Albatross.
Yeah.
It is the biggest aircraft carrier. And the radio jock just paused for a moment and thought, oh, you're absolutely right. We just hadn't considered that we're just landlocked.
Yeah.
We don't move. But we can still provide a whole bunch of services in a similar way.
Less barnacles.
That's right.
So if people would like to engage more with HMAS Albatross, what is the best way for them to do that?
Well, we have a fabulous Fleet Air Arm Museum, and we are in the process of trying to dial up that community engagement piece again with the museum. It does sit outside of the fence, so from a security perspective, there are no issues with members of the community and tourists visiting the museum. We've got some fabulous old naval aircraft in there, and we have members who make themselves available when the museum is open to take questions and in some cases to lead guided tours around the museum and tell stories.
Mm.
That's a great way, of course, to do that, and I certainly would encourage that. And when you see the naval uniform at various community events, then come up, say good day.
Yeah.
Have a chat, ask some questions, and get to know more about what it is we do. And we have the large public events during the year, the Anzac Days. We are working towards a freedom of entry again. These are great opportunities when you see defence members in uniforms to interact and to engage and ask questions. So I encourage that.
Yep.
I'll make a comment here because I was saddened to hear that my wife had a particularly bad experience with a co-worker who for some reason really had a barrow to push when it came to Navy families and Navy defence members. Now, I don't know what happened to that lady and why she was so disparaging with Navy members in Nara. She clearly thought that she was disadvantaged in some way. And I'd like to try and rectify that so that, that's not how defence are viewed in that negative light, but way more positively.
Yeah, and I think even coming back to the question about, well, what is HMAS Albatross's broader role, and you just even the mentioned things like how much things come in and out via sea for trade and how much we use and rely on data cables that are under the water. It's like there's no doubt that most 99% of people use those things on a daily basis, right? And we take those things for granted, right? And it's like you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have no defence force because it's very unlikely that you would also have the access to those things. And so I think sometimes without the broader picture, sometimes people forget that. And so I could see how that could happen.
Yeah. And I might even argue, Brian, it's not that they've forgotten that. Yeah. It's just they're not aware. They don't appreciate. And you know, that may be a fault of, you know, the larger society, because we're not having that narrative, or that story is not necessarily being told.
Mm.
We could probably start that in schools, you know, and start that journey for our young kids at that point, make them understand that we are an island nation.
Mm.
We are wholly reliant on maritime trade and our sea lines of communication.
Mm.
You know, that's the what. What's the so what? And then what's the now what?
Mm.
So,
yeah. Has there been a moment in Nara that has left a lasting positive impression for you?
Oh, look, we came from the UK in 2002 for the first time. I think one of the first things when you come from the UK to Australia, more broadly, first of all, is that the sky is very big. You know, it's a big blue sky, and you probably don't appreciate that. But in the UK, invariably, it's overcast, so there's cloud. It's grey. Mm-hmm. And everything is built up because we don't have as much space. So in Australia, things are spread out. So when you're walking down a town, everything is built up. So you're actually looking through a very narrow slit at a grey sky, where when you come to Nara and the Shoalhaven, it's just, particularly when you look out west towards the Shoalhaven Gorge or south towards Tianjara, it's just a vast blue sky. And, you know, overlay that on top of the fact that there's some just amazing bush and country along the Shoalhaven River. And we were extremely privileged. And when we arrived in 2006, one of the first things my wife wanted us to do as a family was to ski on the river. So we have some fabulous memories for a period of about 10 years when the girls were still growing up and wanted to spend weekends on the river skiing and wakeboarding and biscuiting. It was just an amazing place. We had to pinch ourselves, you know, to have come from the UK and from a very different way of life to find ourselves living in such a beautiful area, the Shoalhaven, and be able to utilize the river and just be surrounded by such big blue sky and some fabulous country. And of course, obviously in a different aspect, because I get to fly my helicopter. I have, you know, flown my helicopter around. So I look down on Nara and the Shoalhaven from, you know, from at least 1,000 feet. And if you imagine going to the top of Camberwara Mountain and standing on the lookout, and that's your purview, then, you know, helicopter air crew from the Fleet Air Arm and from Albatross see that on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an amazing thing to take in.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, like, that's something I think we all take for granted probably living around here, is the sky. A big blue sky. And it's not something that not something that you think about too much, so thank you for bringing that to our awareness.
I do have to say the big blue sky followed by the blue ocean and the white sand when you're down in Jervis Bay, you know, it's second to none.
Really. Beautiful. Thanks for that reminder. And sometimes it takes outsiders, even though you're practically a local now after 24 years, to remind us of just how nice it is. So, what do you hope Nara feels like in 10 years' time?
I'd like to see Nara as a key for it's already a hub. Okay, people come to Nowra so that they can, you know, reach out to the other beautiful aspects around the Shoalhaven. But I want people to come to Nowra and want to stay in and around Nowra because we've developed the waterfront. There is a place to be, to socialise, to enjoy that fabulous river and the lookout. So I'd like to see it really to be a little more vibrant, buzzing. I think the CBD can do with some, you know, bigger shops perhaps that are going to bring people in and want them to stay. Definitely some more restaurants just for choice. We have some fabulous restaurants and some great coffee shops. So that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see us developing, you know, not to be crazy about it, but, you know, within reason, but developing some of the things that we have so we are showcasing them and people want to come and they want to stay and they have choice.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what we're trying to do at nowra.org.au is bring people together, create opportunities, find those businesses who maybe want to expand their restaurant chain and bring their next one down here and that kind of thing. So we have actually heard a rumor too that you're a favorite at Two Brown Men. Can you confirm or deny that you enjoy that restaurant?
I certainly do, yeah. Ayush and Manisha, you know, my favorite. I might even claim to have been somewhat influential in getting some Two Figs wine into the restaurant too. That's nothing against Raj and Silos, of course, but I do have a soft spot for Two Figs, and Robbie up there is fabulous. He really looks after Sarah and I when we go. But I really do enjoy the cream chicken, and having asked Ayush what would he have if he was to choose it from the Noreen, I'm from the UK, and the national dish in the UK is curry. He said cream chicken, which I was a little skeptical about, but he was on point. And I can't now go past Two Brown Men without having a cream chicken. In fact, I think Manisha stops even taking my order. She knows that that's what I'm going to have and that's what comes out. So
they are on season one of this podcast as well. We had Ayush and Manisha in here, and they are just an awesome couple and really good example of, like, you know, they're providing this great opportunity for food in Nowra, and then it's also supported by the Navy as well. You know that's you're keeping the doors open, and I think that's just a really good example of the Navy does put so much money back into the economy here and keeps things going as well. So lastly, who is one person from the Nowra community you'd love to hear their story on this podcast?
So I've got one great mate. He's just, and he'll thump me for saying this. He might be just a little bit older than I am, but it's Dr. Peter Bailey. Now, Pete and his lovely, gorgeous wife, Deb, have been in and out of Nowra for a long time, but Pete went to Nowra High School. He is the former principal of the Illawarra Sports High School in Berkeley for a number of years. He's been retired since, and they live in Maru Meadow. His PhD was on outdoor education. His father flew swordfish during World War II. Pete started with a potential career in the Air Force, but had a medical injury that precluded him from continuing to fly, so he went on then to become a teacher. And he's been in Nowra, and his parents have been in Nowra for years. And what Pete doesn't know or remember about Nowra, certainly a number of years ago, probably is not worth knowing about, right? And he's such a lovely gent. I think he will really tell a great story. I certainly would love to hear what Pete has to say when challenged by some of these softball questions that you've given me, Baron.
Thank you. Well, Dr. Peter Bailey will be reaching out to you for season two. Thank you very much. So last question, I did say the last one was the last one, but this is the last one. Any asks of the people of Nowra?
Yeah, there's a recurring theme here, and I think it's really about embracing the fact that Nowra is the home of the Fleet Air Arm. You do have your very own naval air station, and that's unique. There are no other you know, townships or cities in Australia that can say that we have a naval air station. Yeah, some might say they have a RAF base, but that's not the same, okay? You know, it's not. So embrace that. When you do see our members in uniform, and we are at a point in time now where the strategic context and the security environment is such that we might start to lose our identity in the community because it may not be safe to do so. And I would hate to think that we get to that point. But certainly in the interim, whether that's an Anzac Days, Freedom of Entry parades, or just as the members are picking kids up from school, then reach out, acknowledge them as part of the community.
Yeah.
And a simple gesture like that, I think, would go a long way in terms of continuing to build that relationship more broadly. Mm. And I know that it will be appreciated by our uniform members.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And yeah, as I said, I really have enjoyed seeing you in the community and seeing the way that your quality of being when you're very present, when you're engaging with the community. And it's really lovely to meet you. And I've met your family as well in at those events. And just the way that you guys show up and have a commitment to this community is really appreciated. So I think you're doing a great job at helping to build that bridge between us civilians and all of the Defence Force and Defence Force adjacent people as well. Yeah, so
that'll be three bridges in there and then.
Right? the City of Bridges.
Or is it four? Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Captain Paul.
Thank you, Barry. Thanks for coming on. Yeah. Been a pleasure.
Yeah, cool. Thank you for listening to the Nowra.org.au podcast. I'm your host, Barron Hansen. We're recording in Triple U Studios in Nowra CBD. It's a community radio station. Our producer here is Paul Murphy. Nowra.org.au is funded by the New South Wales Government Uptown Accelerator Program. If you'd like more information, visit nowra.org.au or follow us on socials, subscribe to the mailing list. See you next time.